This is episode 423 of Wheel Bearings. I am Sam Abul-Samad from Telemetry.
And I am Nicole Wakelin from Top Speed.
And I'm Roberto Baldo from SAE International and SAE International's Automotive Engineering Podcast. There you go. Look at that.
Excellent.
Look at that. Doing my job. Look at that.
All the things. Go, Robbie.
Got a new episode coming this week.
What's the topic?
This week's topic is EV manufacturing. I talked to Hyundai, we talked to Voltaic, and we talked to Bosch. So,
okay,
the big
cool.
three!
Can't wait to hear what they all have to say.
Oh, no, I just broke something.
Oh.
Wow. I'm going to put that down. I got twitchy. I need a fidget spinner.
Well, Nicole,
yeah.
It looks like you've driven a thing or three.
I know some of this is I've just had so much and then I've missed an episode. I'm like, I just have a list of stuff I have to talk about.
Well, first of all, before we talk about what you drove, did you guys find a place for Rose and Reza's wedding?
We did. We have figured out the wedding. That was our mission last week, and wedding location has been secured. Giant check has been written. The wedding is all set to go. Yes.
And you saw when she graduated that all your problems were over.
I know, right? I thought tuition checks were the last big checks I was going to write. I'm like, what is this? Is just the deposit?
Yay.
But yes,
gonna be
we
doing
have
extra
found,
work.
We have found a spot for the wedding, so yeah, it'll be lovely.
You're going to see Nicole's byline everywhere.
She's going to be cranking out stories like that.
I know, I've got to write 800 stories a day to pay for this wedding.
Anybody that'll pay her a few shekels, you know.
Right, anybody want to throw a couple of dollars my way to write something, let me know.
Or, you know, you could just subscribe to the Wheel Bearings Patreon. And then, you know,
oh, yeah.
Like, right?
Throw a few dollars Robbie and Nicole's way.
It'll go to the Rose Wedding Fund on my end.
Yeah.
What's it? My food for my animals is very expensive. And
well, there's that too.
Yes, that
too. And music gear isn't cheap.
Yeah. All right, Nicole, what did you drive?
Okay, well, I'll talk about what I drove to do the site visits for the wedding. It was the F-150 Lightning. Which Ooh. I've driven before. Yeah. So here's the fun thing. So I had them along for the ride, and especially Reza, he doesn't ride in a lot of press cars. So it's kind of neat to hear him like, what's going on here, right? So I had that, and I had a loaner vehicle for other reasons that was an SUV. I have a Durango that's not a new Durango sitting in the driveway, not reviewing it, just sitting there. And I said, do you guys want to take the truck? Or you want to take the Durango? I'm just reminding you that the truck is a bouncy little ride compared to just little Durango. He's like, no, I want to take the truck. I went over a speed bump slightly too fast, and his head hit the top of the truck. And boom, and now he's 6'3", 6'4", and he's like, hey. And I'm like, I gave you a choice, boy. You could have been in the Durango. You chose the Lightning. That
yeah,
is your
but you know what? If you drove the Durango over that same speed bump at the same speed,
I know.
It probably would have been the same thing.
It might not have been significantly different, but then there was something else you were driving, and like, it's not that it's unwieldy, but it's a big, heavy truck, right? So if you're on winding New Hampshire back roads, it's like, whoa. And he said something. He's like, I know, I can't say anything. I had a choice. I picked this. But it was great. I mean, we had four people in it, and I really went for quite the drive because it was up in the White Mountains. It was very easy to drive, very easy to park, surprisingly, and comfortable. And I mean, we were in that car for hours. We were driving around in that thing, and it was really, really nice. I had the Platinum, which is the fanciest of the fancy, and it is $84,995. $84,995. It's a lot. It's not an inexpensive truck.
On the other hand, 6 or 12 months ago, it was $93,000.
Yes. So surprisingly, that's a bargain now, is what Sam is saying.
Yeah, everything's relative.
Everything's relative. And destination fee, you guys want to take a guess?
Ooh. Destination fee on the Monroney or what it is right now
I Googled it right now. So this is what it told me right now.
Okay.
You can guess what my source said.
I think,
good luck.
18?
I'm assuming it's the same as all the other F-150s, which would put it at $25.95.
Robbie?
18, like a fool.
Oh, you said 18.
I said 18.
Okay, what I got was
$21.95.
$21.95 is what came up when I searched. But as we've discovered over the last...
Okay, so maybe they didn't increase that one yet.
Over the last couple of weeks, depending on the instant at which you look for the destination, your source, whether you're looking at a Monroney or the OEM site or their media site, which might not be actually weirdly as updated as a consumer site, you're going to get a range of numbers, people. Which is awful, right? That you could have anything from, you know, like, you could have a $500, $600, $700, $800 swing in this number.
Your charges will vary.
Your charges will vary. Yes. So the Platinum, they're all dual motor. They're all four-wheel drive. The Platinum, there's three batteries. There's a standard range, then two extended range.
Only one extended range.
Well, it comes up with two. It had 123 kilowatt and a 131 kilowatt one. When you look at when you look at the technical specs for the vehicle, it comes up with two different. And I was trying to figure out. Yeah, I was a little thrown too, Sam. But it does show 123 kilowatt extended range battery, 131 kilowatt extended range battery. And I think it's a trim level thing. The Pro and the Flash get the 123. And then the Platinum, the Lariat, and I guess available on the Pro is the 131.
Because previously the Pro, the standard range battery was like the 96.
This is 98 now. Yeah. So it's 98 now.
98.
That's what.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It was always 98. I wonder, I'll have to check with Ford and see if
they added another
variant.
Well, I think it's because of that Flash thing. Isn't the Flash like its own little animal?
I don't think they put a smaller or lower capacity battery in it.
That's what it has. Tech specs are wrong, because that's what I am literally looking at right now.
I mean, given the current state of the Ford media site,
I would not
be the least bit surprised if the tech specs were wrong.
I have no idea where to find anything.
Exactly.
It's the worst thing on the planet.
I am going with the official tech specs that I have pulled up because of this exact confusion that I had too, Sam. And I'm looking at their official PDF at this very moment that has the three different...
I believe what you're reading, I'm just not sure I believe that's what's actually in the vehicle.
I don't believe either of you.
We're just all liars, 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 damn liars.
Ever since the Ford media. I think our listeners. Okay, so every automaker has a media site.
And these
media sites are varying degrees of quality and helpfulness. All we want is I want a specs. I want an updated spec sheet. I want, a page where let's talk about, the RAV4. Okay, I want to go to that page and see everything about the RAV4. And there's photos, and maybe there's some B-roll, and there's PDFs we can download for tech specs and various trim levels, and that's it. And somehow Ford decided, nah.
They came up with this new site. It is not easy to navigate. It's complicated. It took me more tries than it should have to find this goofy document. Once it's there, it has all the stuff you need. It's the finding it part. You're like, nope, not there. Nope, not there. Nope, also not there. Where would it be? So,
Lewis and Clark looking for Oregon.
You're trying to click
on
the right
link. Maybe you'll make it. Some people are going to die on the way.
Right. You might. Yeah, exactly. Some people are going to die on the way. Who knows? So I have the Platinum. The Platinum has, according to this, 131 kilowatt battery is what it has. And that is an extended range battery. And this is also the most powerful of the lot. It is 580 horsepower. That base battery, the standard range, is 452. They list the questionable middle range extended range battery is 536. But I was confused, but this is what it says. So I found the range came up about what it seemed like it was about right for what I was driving. Mind you, I've got four people in the truck the whole time, and we're in the White Mountains. So it's an altitude thing. So you have some big ups and big downs with the hills, but it seemed like it was pretty good. My biggest complaint was, and I just have bad luck with charging, you guys. So we went to the first place to charge, and the charger was out of order because we're kind of north. So it's not like you get charging banks where there's, six, eight different places you can plug in at one charging station. Was out of order. Second one we went up to, there was one working, one out of order. And the one that was working, there was someone plugged in there already. So I couldn't get it charged. We had 30 miles of range when we got home. I'm literally watching. I'm like, I think we're going to be good. Please don't get me stranded in northern New Hampshire. I think we're going to be good. So we made it with like 30 something miles to spare because we did a lot of driving that day. So I had a little range anxiety because the charging stations were refusing to cooperate with my charging needs. I did enjoy driving it, though. It's a nice truck. You know, it has a lot of power. It moves. You know, when you have those EVs, they always have that sort of that instant EV torque everybody talks about. And this is no exception. It's a quick truck, despite being a heavy truck. It's nice to drive. It was great on the highway. I do find it a little rolly in twisty, turny roads when you start getting on side roads, which is where we were for part of the time. I feel like the handling isn't quite to be, but I do love the Platinum. I feel like it's a lot of money. It is not cheap, but it definitely feels like a luxury vehicle when you got like leather everything, you got heated seats, you got heated, you know, it has all the bells and whistles that you could possibly want. And it has the table that folds down, which isn't exclusive to the Platinum trim, but it has the table. So when there's a button you push next to the gear shift folds flat into the center console, then the lid essentially on the center console that covers the storage cubby folds out and you have a little table, which we use to eat lobster rolls in a parking lot.
I believe
lot.
The official terminology for that table is the cookie table.
I call it the cookie table because I like to use they call it a work table, which is lame.
I call it a cookie table.
Burrito
I think
table.
Just different. Yeah.
Right? But yeah,
taco
it's still
table.
The cookie table. Taco table. This week it was the lobster table. We had lobster rolls, which were fabulous, right before the place we were going to was closing for the season. So we got in our one last lobster roll up on the seacoast in New Hampshire. And it is great. Like, it was really the first time I truly used it for anything beyond putting cookies on it. But like we had like the bag open. I have everything open. It is really just the perfect size for if you're going to be someone who's going to be working and you're running around, you're having to eat lunch in your truck or something. It was a great little size for having our food on. So it worked out. I really enjoy driving this. I feel like, you know, the challenge with this truck or any EV that's a truck is if you're going to be towing, it's tough because you lose a lot of that range when you're towing. So depending on whether towing is a priority for you or an occasional thing for you, choose carefully between this and a straight up normal gas powered F-150. That would be my biggest reservation. That and that it's a pricey little bugger. It's pricey, but I did enjoy driving it. I think it's a good vehicle. I love how it looks. I like the lighting and stuff. I like that there's a little American flag with a lightning bolt on the back. That amuses me for no particular reason. I love that little badge. So that's, you know, F-150 Lightning. There weren't significant changes for coming up for 26. It's kind of just cruising along doing its own thing. So even though we're at the end of the 25 model year, you're not going to see huge changes, I don't think, for 26. But we'll have to see. We'll have to see what happens and what it does with pricing and all that kind of stuff. They get a new trim, I think. I keep wanting to say
STK.
STX. I keep wanting to say STK, which is a steak place. I'm like,
yeah,
that is not.
The STX is replacing the XLT.
The XLT, and it's supposed to be like the more off-road one. It gets like a locking e-locking rear differential, some little goodies and such, off-road tires, I think. So, that's the F-150 Lightning. So that was my road tripping around New Hampshire car last week. Yeah. So that was one. Then they put me in another giant Ford. They put me in the Ford Expedition Tremor. So it's just one giant Ford to another giant Ford. This weirdly was harder for me to drive. I don't know why I found it more. I drove it into Boston yesterday to meet somebody for brunch, like one does in their giant Expedition Tremor. And somehow, like, it just, every time I parked this, I felt like I had to park 18 times. It was like, I could not get into a parking space right the first time to save my life.
Thing is like 36 feet long.
It was huge. And the parking garages in Boston where you feel like, you know, the height of the car is a fixed number and you know the height of the garage is a fixed number, but I can't look up while I'm driving at all because I'm like, no, I'm going to take off the roof of this vehicle. It felt so close. There was a spot where they had like, you know, they'll put sometimes like insulation around air vents or whatever in a garage and it gets a little frayed. And it was like just the soft insulations hanging down slightly and there were little bits of strings and stuff. And
you mean that asbestos, like, probably?
That asbestos garbage. I'm like, that has got to be touching the top of this truck. That has got to be done. And I can't hear it because it's just soft. It was a little disconcerting.
To airport parking. Because the whole time I'm like,
Right?
I don't
And then Russ is there. He's like, you know, you're fine. There's enough room. I'm like, I know, Mr. Logic, but when you look up, it looks like I'm going to take out that pipe. So I did drive it, and I did manage to park it in the narrowest parking spot in the parking garage with two giant, like, support beams next to me. So I had no little post. I'm like, there's no room here. But it was nice to drive. I mean, I enjoyed driving it. It's big. And this wasn't the Max. The Max, like the long wheelbase, I just, good luck with that. Unless you live in like the middle of Nebraska, I don't know how you drive that anywhere. But uniformly, and I was out with a couple different people with this week, everybody loves the screen setup, how you have the one digital screen that is in front of you but set back, almost like where you'd have a head-up display, sort of is where it kind of looks like it is on the dashboard. And then the infotainment screen is, you know, front and center, but closer to everybody. But two different people, Russ and a friend of mine, we were driving and they both went to reach the gear shift instead of the volume control because they're right next to each other, sort of under the infotainment screen. And the gear shift is a spinny knob. It's bigger. It's much bigger. The volume is a tiny knob. But they both reached for it, which was funny. They're like, and I was backing up the one, I was in reverse. One girl, she hit it as I was driving. I'm like, why did the car just stop? Because she thought she was spinning the volume and she was spinning the gears. Yeah, knocked it into neutral. I had a moment of like, what, did I just hit something? Because that's abrupt when you suddenly flip a car into neutral. So she did that. And then Russ Grove was like, why is this right next to each other? Why are these this way? And I think, well, that's kind of funny. Two different people did the same mistake. One, a guy that's, you know, one Russ and one, a young woman who's about like 25 or something. So it's not even an age thing. Totally different people. Same impulse was to reach for the wrong button. I thought that was interesting. Yeah. Yep.
I'm sure it's happened a lot of times all over the world.
I'm sure we're not the only ones. We are not the only ones. And the Tremor is like the SXT. I did it right.
STX.
The F1 STX. Dang it. Of the Lightning is the off-road-ish version of the Expedition. It gets 10.6 inches of ground clearance. It gets 33-inch, you know, off-road tires. There's skid plates. It has like the trail turn assist when you want to do really tight turns. There's an off-road and a rock crawl mode. I want to know what human is doing any of that in a car this big.
No humans? When your boss, you know, goes to Burning Man and you have to go pick them up. I just got to call what? Oh my God, he's on so much mescaline right
now. So this is the single use case.
Gotta go pick him up. Well, are you gonna take the G Wagon? No. I need to take something that's not, if it gets scratched, it's not that big of a deal.
I'm gonna take the Expedition.
And you know, the G Wagon's on high performance street tires, you know, and it's just gonna get stuck in the mud there. So
it's gonna be stuck in 2 seconds. This would not get stuck in the mud. This would get you out of the mud, I think. You would not.
I don't know,
be
based
stuck
on some of the mud I've seen the last 2 years, pictures of the mud at Burning Man. I think even the Tremor would probably
everything,
get stuck.
Everything gets stuck in that
everything
mud.
Is stuck
you
in
need
the
a
mud.
You need a tracks.
There you
like
go.
A, yeah. Like tank tracks.
Like tank tracks.
Yeah.
Modify your Expedition.
Yeah.
So I mean, so this is, you know, it is the off-road version of this. I feel like some of those features, you're probably not doing the things that would require those features in an Expedition. But if you are, good for you. I do like how it looks. It is really roomy. It is huge. It's a cavernous SUV. It has the split tailgate that has a little drop, I forget what the word, clamshell, sorry, couldn't think of the word, where it lifts up as the major portion. There's a tiny little piece that flips down, which I just love that because then your groceries don't go rolling out of the car. So it makes a nice little pod for your stuff. And so I like that. And driving it, it's fine. It is a 3.5 liter V6 and has a 10-speed auto and there's 440 horsepower, 510 pound-feet of torque. It goes. You know, it's big. It goes. It sounds like it goes. It's one of those big vehicles that when you hear the sound of it, it's not sports car sound, but it's that aggressive, like, get out of the way. Like, I love the way it sounds. You mash the gas getting on the highway. And it's just kind of like, it's not like it's this fancy, super crazy engine, but it just sounds mean in a good way. Like, move it. You and your tiny little thing, get out of my way. I'm going to run you right over. So I did enjoy driving this, aside from having to park it in the parking garage at the Prue down in Boston yesterday, where I thought I was going to die. But otherwise, I enjoyed driving the Expedition.
All right. And what was the other thing?
Oh, third thing.
Wait, did we do the pricing on the expedition?
Oh, I just closed it. Shoot.
$2,000? I don't know.
It was $2,000. What did you say? $2,000? What were you going to say, Sam?
$2,595.
So mine came up as $2,095, which is not the same as the Lightning. It's just its own little animal. And I'm like, what the heck? I don't get it. So basically, you're going to blow a couple $1,000s on destination folks somewhere in that neighborhood. Let me see if I can get this to come back up.
So much
no,
money.
I closed it. Now it's...
I'll find it.
So, yeah. So you're just, you're using a lot of... You're going to spend a lot on destination no matter what. You're going to spend a couple $1,000s. Wait, let's see if I can get it. It was... Here we go. It was $2,095 is what I came up with. And the Tremor Trim came up at $78,035.
Well, on the Ford building price right now?
Yes.
$25.95.
Okay. See, so I made this like 2 days ago and it was probably.
Yeah. So they probably just changed it on Friday.
I don't know. Yeah. Came up as $2,095.
Yeah. No, I mean, they've all been changing them. This was what we talked about a couple of weeks ago. That they're cranking up all these destination charges, or they're hiding the price increases.
It's a lot. Like when you just think, I know these are big vehicles, but like, gosh, $2,500.
$26.
That's like $26. That's like a price of like a random package. You know, once upon a time, you want to like add, I don't know, heated seats or something, or the premium infotainment system, or you could just have the car. That's like the destination charge on it now. That's a little insane, and it's not a Ford thing. It's an everybody thing.
Yeah.
Everyone's doing it.
Ram, they raised their destination charges on the trucks to the $25.95 sometime in the last couple of weeks. The only one that hasn't so far is Toyota. I think they're still at $19.95 or $2,000.
Which is a downright bargain, under $2,000 at this point. Go Toyota. So, yeah, so those are the vehicles that I had the last couple weeks. I was all big Ford things, Ford F-150 Lightning, Ford Expedition Tremor. I feel like whatever I get next week has to be smaller, because unless someone gives me a Hummer, there is nothing bigger.
Well, I don't know if I mentioned it here on the show, but there's somebody in my neighborhood who, until about 3 weeks ago, had a Model Y parked in their driveway. They have since gotten rid of that vehicle and replaced it with another EV.
Did they get a Hummer?
They did.
Wow.
They got a Hummer pickup.
Wow. That's quite the change.
I guess you're going for it. You got to go going all in.
If you want it, I still maintain, if you want the car, no matter what anybody thinks, buy it. If you like it, makes you happy, and you can afford it, knock yourself out.
It's the only convertible EV you can get in America.
That's no. Oh, two. Yes. Yes. I was thinking convertible pickup truck because the Gladiator is a convertible pickup.
Yeah, there you go.
Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia.
We've updated the Wheel Bearings merch store, and now there's a whole bunch of new choices, new colors, new styles, T-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, hats, mugs, travel mugs, stickers, aprons, tote bags, you name it. You can get your Wheel Bearings merch at shop.wheelbearings.media. Go check it out. That's shop.wheelbearings.media. All right.
There you go. You want a convertible. Boom.
Yeah. What about the passport? Did you want to talk about that?
Well, that's more of a drive. I mean, I can talk about it now. So that wasn't so much a review vehicle that I had as it was a program. And I don't think I've talked about this, the passport off-road drive that I did in the Carolinas, South Carolina, North Carolina,
Not yet.
Okay. I lost track of my weeks. I'm like, I have that written down. Did I ever talk about that? So they invited me to do an off-road drive in the passport. And it wasn't just like random place that they picked. They had it at an off-road park in the Carolinas that their engineers actually use for testing. It's not just Hondas. Lots of other companies have used it. In fact, he mentioned seeing other OEMs out there, and people even just use it as a recreational thing. But it's this huge area, lots of technical terrain that you can cover. And they've been using that, the engineers there, for all sorts of testing. So they took us out there. And this is the cool part. It wasn't just like guys who know how to drive who were spotting us and helping us. It was the engineers. Like, the engineers ran this program, which was cool. Like the coolest thing ever, because they got so excited about little details. It's like, I designed this tow hook's mine. Like, they were so excited about the things they did, and they really, really knew it. So there wasn't a single question you could ask them about the vehicle that they couldn't answer. And they also, as we were out there driving it, because they have driven many of these trails, because they have designed this vehicle, they know exactly how hard you can push this. And that was sort of the point of the program, was to show that the Passport is now off-road. There is an off-road capable Passport. It's not just off-road in name only. And they took us out there and they proved it. They took us on some really technical trails. It required spotting in places. And then they did this thing that was absolutely terrifying. So they said that instead of having somebody spot you, you had your drive partner spot you. They wanted you to understand what it was like to just drive off-road in the Passport, and how you would learn to spot somebody in the trail sport trim, which is their fancy trim for off-roading. And you had to spot. And I'm like, I've never spotted anybody driving like that in my life. Now, they had an engineer kind of hover behind you. So if I had told the guy to go left and he's like, you're going to kill him, go right, he would have said that. But it was still this incredible experience trying to help spot these people through like really tricky stuff. And there were a lot of times when it was rocky enough that if you didn't take the right line, it wasn't like you were damaging the car so much, although you could have. It was, nope, you're not going anywhere, because now you've got yourself on rocks that aren't going to let you do it. And they had us do this one really technical route, and they had us use the off-road mode, and it figured it out, and we get through it. Then they had one guy, what journalist, they asked him, he volunteered to drive it not in the off-road mode, to just drive it straight up. And the difference between when you were telling the car I'm off-road and I want to drive off-road and letting it think it was on the highway was dramatic. He still got through it, but it was a lot more work. But I was genuinely impressed with this. Like, it's funny because there's so many vehicles that they say, oh, that can go off-road. That's our off-road trim. And you're like, other than having orange accents, there is nothing about this that is off-road.
Right? And all-terrain tires, right?
Like, red is the color of fast. Orange is the color of off-road. And just because you made orange tow hooks or put orange accents on it does not guarantee capability. This was really capable. I thoroughly enjoyed this drive. And it was 2 full days of driving. It wasn't a 3-day drive program. It was 4. And the first day, we even spent a day in the classroom, like at the little thing, classroom, I say, little tiny garage thing that served as a classroom, where they went through, like, we're going to teach you as if you don't know. We're going to teach you how to drive off-road. We're going to teach you what these technical things mean. They even had a little tiny Lego version to show you how the differential works. Like, they were all playing with this little Lego thing that they made. And what's even cooler, so they started doing this like the engineers started doing this. Then they started training more engineers. Then they start, you know, they're testing. They're training people who aren't anywhere near engineering in Honda, because they feel like in order for people to understand what their vehicles do and why they need certain features, it's important for an executive to occasionally get out there and drive it, see what it means to drive a trail sport off-road. So they have people from all sort of different walks of life within Honda who are taking this same little course, only theirs is more in-depth because they have more time for it, to learn what the vehicles can do and also why certain features are important. So it also serves as like a development thing, and almost like internally for the engineers to sell the stuff to the product guys that they want to do and why. Like, if we had this, it would do that, and see what it does off-road. So it was a really fascinating experience. And I already thought the Trail Sport was surprisingly capable. Now it's even more so. Like, I was genuinely shocked by how much this could handle, how well it drove, the technical stuff that it could manage. And yeah, because I know they have a long history, but I think of Honda more performancey than off-road. And this changed that perception for me. I definitely think, like, they're really going after it. They're going at it. And they're not just doing it with orange trim. They're doing it with a serious plan and attitude. So yeah, I took the Honda Passport Trail Sport off-road in conditions that were truly serious, and the thing was a champ.
I was just watching right now. The guys at TFL have a Passport Trail Sport on a long-term loan from Honda for 3 months, and so they've been doing some off-road stuff with it. And I was watching something the other day. The one flaw in the in the Passport.
What's the flaw? Because
the Trail Sport
never learned to love.
It's got skid plates. It's got the all-terrain tires. Mm-hmm. It's got the IVTM 4 system on the rear axle that acts like a locker. The problem is it doesn't have enough ground clearance.
It doesn't have huge ground clearance. So if you're right. So if you're going to crawl over something like. Because I want to say it's light off-roading only in the sense that it's not made to crawl over giant rocks and such.
Yeah.
Or things that are overly, but you can still handle, it's like a medium off-roader. And it's the ground clearance that is what holds it back. You're absolutely right. But so if you're going over really like tall rocks, big rocks, I guess, or incredibly uneven terrain, you have to pick your line very, very carefully to make sure that you are balancing.
You don't want to bottom it out.
So that you don't bottom it out. So you do have to really learn to pick your line. But I think people who are doing that, like when you're off-roading and if you're doing more technical stuff, if you're really, truly technical, if you're really, truly an expert, you're going to be able to look and say, like, that's the line I need to take, or I can't hit that. Like, that's too much. I can't handle that. But it does handle, like, I think for the average person, far more than other off-road vehicles.
Yeah, but just for comparison, the Passport has 8.3 inches of ground clearance.
Yeah,
a Subaru Crosstrek, base Crosstrek has 8.7, and the Wilderness is 9.3. So it's got Crosstrek Wilderness has got a full extra inch of ground clearance compared to the Passport.
Yeah, the ground clearance is its weak point. But it wasn't such a weak point that I think for the person who's typically getting this, for the family who's going off-roading and wants to just push it a little bit further than they might generally. If you're a hardcore off-roader, you're not going for either of these, really. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you're going for something.
You're
going
to buy a Bronco
you're going to buy a Bronco. Or, yeah, but in terms of the sort of medium off-roader,
take away, because, when we drove at Puerto Rico earlier this year, on some muddy trails and things like that, through deep woods, it did great. It did surprisingly well. You just have to be wary of, going over any obstacles that are too large.
I learned something neat. I don't know if they talked about this when we were in Puerto Rico, Sam, but they talk about how the recovery hooks on the front of the vehicle are designed. The guy who designed them was there. Okay. The engineer. And they had all these challenges, like there's all challenges with where you put recovery hooks because they have to be strong enough to pull a vehicle out. They can't like rip apart the car. They have to be attached in certain spots. But they also have to be able, in addition to handling that, torque from towing the vehicle out of something or pulling another vehicle out. If you're in an accident, you have to make sure that they don't send the energy from that accident directly into the passengers and hurt people or hurt a pedestrian if you hit a pedestrian. So there's this balance to be struck in designing these. And he said Honda has a patent on this. So they are more than capable of when you're pulling, to be used to pull the Passport out of a tough spot or to be used to have the Passport tow somebody else out of a tough spot. But when the impact is when it's an impact, if it's the right impact, they actually collapse. So that they collapse in such a way that they distribute the force into the vehicle so it won't hurt the people inside. And also in terms of pedestrian thing, it's less likely to hurt pedestrians and plow into people. So they have this patented, collapsible recovery hooks on the front of the vehicle, which I thought were kind of cool. I'd never seen that. And he said, no, this particular thing is patented by Honda. He's like, I did this. I thought that was kind of cool. Yeah, I thought it was neat.
All right. Well, I drove the 2025... let me double check the model year. Yes, it was a 2025 BMW 228 xDrive Grand Coupe. Ooh. So this is the 4-door 2 series from BMW. And if you look at 2 series on the BMW website, you'll find two very distinctly different cars. The 4-door, the Grand Coupe, is based on a transverse engine, front-wheel drive platform. Although it's available with all-wheel drive, which is what this one was, X-Drive. So this is the same platform that they use for the Mini Countryman, and I think even for the regular Minis now. It's a very different platform. And then there's the 2 Series Coupe, which is a rear drive, more traditional BMW longitudinal engine. That's what you get with the M2, and I think there's a regular 2 Series Coupe as well. That's a fundamentally different car. So the 228 Grand Coupe, compact four-door. I really like the size. I think it's, for me personally, I think it's a good sized car. It's pretty similar in size to, if you think of like an E36 3 Series, so like an early 90s 3 Series, it's comparable to that size because obviously, the 3 Series has gotten a lot bigger over the years, as is everything else. So I like the size of the 228. The engine, the only engine they offer in here in the U.S. is a 2-liter 4-cylinder turbo, 241 horsepower. With the X drive, with the all wheel drive, it'll do 0 to 60 in about 5.8 seconds. The front wheel drive version takes about 6.1 because it doesn't have enough grip to get the power down. But the thing with the interior on this thing, you can definitely see the direction that BMW's been shifting in the last couple of years with some of their newer models, moving more and more away from physical controls towards various touch interfaces. It still has manual vents, so that's good.
Yay.
That is acceptable. But things like the traditional iDrive rotary knob on the console, that's gone. You've got the shifter is like a little, it's an electronic shifter. It's basically just a little toggle switch that you flip forward or back to go to reverse or drive. And there's a button for park. And then the volume control is like a roller to the right of that. That's in the cluster, and you can roll it to adjust the volume. And then most everything else is in the touch interface, which means, all your climate controls and everything are in the touch screen. Most of that stuff is persistent and stays on the screen, so it doesn't go away when when you've got a media player up or your navigation or anything like that. So it's there all the time, but you do have to look at it to hit the touch targets, which, not great, but as they say, you can also use voice controls to adjust things like temperature and fan speed, and then you can just reach out to grab the little things for the vents for the directional control for the vents. I actually genuinely liked driving the car. I think the performance is great. Under 6 seconds, 0 to 60 is more than adequate for any daily driving. The back seat, is a little on the tight side. I'm 5'10", 5'11", depending on when you measure me. And I can just fit behind myself.
Are you taller, like when you're further away from the Earth's core?
No, like in the morning. I mean, if you measure your height when you first get up in the morning, assuming you sleep horizontally, you tend to be a little bit taller in the morning than you are at the end of the day. Yeah.
Is that real? Is that true?
Yeah. No, it's absolutely true.
As you settle.
It's, usually like less than half an inch, but.
As your bones and.
Yeah, especially as you get older,
settle.
Too. Yeah.
Crushing weight of humanity.
Well, there's that too. The crushing weight of living in 2025. So I can just fit behind myself in the back seat, and I have the driver's seat set for my height. So you can get four. Robbie would not be comfortable sitting behind me. Russ would probably not be comfortable sitting behind you, Nicole.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got people of median height, typical median heights, you could have four adults in here without too much difficulty, at least for shorter drives. The trunk is decent sized trunk, but as is the case with most sedans that have a fast back roofline, the trunk opening itself is small. Given the shape of this thing, I would have preferred if they made it a hatchback, because then you have a nice big trunk opening. And if you want to carry bigger stuff, you can fold the back seats down. You can get stuff in there. It handles and drives really well. It was fun to drive. Steering feel is not as good as an E36 BMW, but it's not bad. It's BMW's gotten a lot better with their electric power steering systems over the years. This one had the M Sport package, which means it's got the adaptive M suspension, adaptive dampers, anthracite headliner, whatever the hell anthracite is. It's got an M steering wheel.
Finally, that anthracite headliner I've been waiting for.
M logos all over the place. Has the driver assistance package with adaptive cruise and active driving assistant pro that at speeds below 30 miles an hour, if you're in traffic, traffic 40? Jam on the highway, you can go hands off for a while. It's got all the other usual stuff that you would expect to find in a more premium vehicle, in 2025. Nice leather seats and digital key if you want to use that with ultra wideband. Heated and cooled front seats. Actually, no, sorry, not cooled, just heated front seats. It was nicely equipped. The 28X drive starts at $41,600. If you can go with with front wheel drive, you can save about $2,000. Starts at $39,600. Bottom line price on this one, $50,825. Guesses on the destination charge?
$1,295.
Ooh, we're close.
What'd you say, Robbie?
$1,200.
Robbie gets it.
$1,175. Go, Robbie.
The 228X drive is rated at 30 miles per gallon combined, 26 city, 38 highway. I got about 33, so did pretty good on that. It's a nice car, and I like the color. It's this dark blue color, the Tanzanite Blue 2 metallic. So it's not Tanzanite Blue 1, but Tanzanite Blue 2.
Tanzanite Blue 1. It probably drew people mad with desire.
I guess. It's a dark blue. It's a good looking color. So that's the BMW 228 xDrive Grand Coupe. All right, let's get into some of the stories of the week. First off, Toyota. There was an event in Phoenix this week that we will talk about next time. Because it's still under embargo. But one of the comments that came out, talking about, on the new Toyota RAV4, the 2026 Toyota RAV4, they have a new trim level called GR Sport. In the past, the RAV4 had a TRD trim level or a TRD Pro trim level. And they've had, TRD trims on the cars like the Camry. But Toyota's shifting direction a little bit with their branding. And so now going forward, the TRD branding is going to be exclusive for body on frame vehicles. So for trucks and SUVs like the Land Cruiser and the 4Runner, those will have be available with TRD or TRD off-road or TRD Pro trim levels. All the cars and crossovers.
Just the worst three letters to put on your car. But
I know.
You've had time.
All the
to
cars
change
and
it.
Crossovers will have some variation of GR. If they have a sporty
that sounds
trim.
Cool.
So that sounds cool.
GR for, grr. So GR for cars and
turd
for trucks. Okay.
So the new RAV4 has a GR Sport trim level. There will presumably on other cars in the presumably in the, like on the Camry and things like that, they'll add a GR Sport there as well. The sports cars have already been branded as GR for the last several years anyway. The Supra was technically a GR Supra. You get the Corolla GR and the GR86. So now they're just spreading that out to other non-body-on-frame vehicles.
Makes sense.
Okay. Well, I mean, there's a logic to it. They've got a plan. So, yeah. Okay, we'll get used to it.
They got a plan.
Yeah.
I driven up.
So,
never mind.
Back in the spring, Stellantis showed, they revealed the next generation Jeep Compass. And they started production of this thing in Italy last spring for the European market. But there was some question about North America because the launch of this thing or the debut of this new compact crossover coincided with the implementation of all kinds of tariffs on vehicles built in places like Mexico and Canada and everywhere else in the world. And Stellantis's plan had been to that they were in the process of retooling their Brampton, Ontario assembly plant, which used to build the old Charger and Challenger and Chrysler 300. And they were retooling that to build the new Compass. Well, once the tariffs hit, Stellantis hit pause on that plan. And they stopped all the work on the Brampton plant. And it was unclear what Stellantis' plan was for the new Compass. You know, were they going to build it? Were they going to launch it at all in North America? But, you know, where is it going to come from? And this week, Stellantis made a big announcement that they're investing $13 billion in U.S. production.
That's a lot.
Where does Stellantis have $13 billion? That's my first question.
I have no idea.
That's a good question.
Wait. What's the timeline? $13 billion?
Over the next
4 years. $13 billion next 4 years, adding more than 5,000 jobs at new plants in Illinois, Ohio, Michigan, and Indiana, the largest investment in the company's 100-year history. Two new Jeep vehicles in Illinois. Yeah. New Jeep vehicles.
So the Belvidere, Illinois plant, which has been idle since 2023 when they ended production of the old Cherokee, starting in 2027, we'll be building the new Cherokee, which currently is being produced in Mexico, and also the Compass. Those are both going to move to Illinois for the U.S. market. And the Belvidere plant was originally slated to build a new midsize Ram pickup truck, which still doesn't exist. That is instead is going to be built in Toledo, alongside the Wrangler and the Gladiator.
Okay. Wrangler, Gladiator, new midsize pickup.
Yep.
Launch timing 2028. Wait.
For the midsize pickup, yes.
2028?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it's... I mean, you know, this is what we said, you know, when the whole tariff thing starts. Like, these changes aren't going to happen overnight.
They're not fast.
You're not going to shift production around, you know, in 6 weeks or
that's
6 months.
That's it's 25, that's 3 years, and it's not like Stellantis is dragging its heels here. These are big decisions easy to reverse.
Big swing for Stellantis, a company that's not doing great financially.
Right?
Well, all of this happened? Oh, maybe.
I know.
Like they're trying? Yeah. Okay.
So the midsize truck is going to be coming out of Toledo. And then the Warren, Michigan plant that currently produces the Wagoneer, the Jeep Wagoneer, is going to add another full-size SUV that will be available with combustion engines and also the EREV powertrain that we talked about last week that's going into the Wagoneer, the Grand Wagoneer in the spring and also in the Ram REV. Which, as it's now called. So we don't know which brand this new full-size SUV is going to carry. Is it going to be a Ram or is it going to be a Dodge?
It's just going to be called the Hemi.
The Hemi.
Just name
the Hemi a new SUV.
get rid of the Ram name. Just say the Hemi Ram.
The Hemi Ram.
The Hemi Ram truck.
And it says in that Michigan thing, there's also $130 million to make the Detroit Assembly Complex Jefferson produce the next gen Dodge Durango, but it's production in 2029.
Yeah.
How long has the Durango been the Durango? When was the last time the Durango
Current Durango debuted in 2011.
Oof. Oh my God.
Yeah.
It's gonna be just old enough to vote, and then it'll be like change.
Ow. I have a Durango in my driveway right now because I have a loaner vehicle for my car. And I like the Durango, but I'm like, man, this feels old. And it's not. It's probably a rental car that's maybe, I don't know, a year old or something.
Yeah, and it's based on the platform of the previous generation Grand Cherokee. Because it's built in the same plant, the Jefferson plant. So they're gonna finally launch a next generation Durango in 2029.
All right, Durango fans.
And then one last thing is the Kokomo, Indiana engine plant currently produces, can't remember what engine they produce there now.
He's like, I don't know, make some engine thing.
Anyway.
It produces an engine.
Yeah, they produce some engine there. They're going to be producing what is referred to in this press release as the all-new GME T4 Evo engine. So the current GME engine is the 2-liter turbo that's in a bunch of Stellantis products, including the Wrangler plug-in hybrid that you have, Nicole.
Yes.
So that's there's going to be this GME. GME stands for Global Medium Engine. So what they're referring to in this release is GME T4 Evo. Is going to be
what's the T global
turbo.
Whatever and turbo oh turbo thank
yeah.
you
and we'll have more to say about this one next week.
Evo stands for Lancer. They're going to start making a Lancer.
The Jeep Lancer.
She's like, oh yeah, if you want to buy the rights to it, here's some 15-year-old designs. All right, we're good with that. You seen
we'll
our Durango?
Yeah,
it's been around since 2011.
Last Lancer, I think, did come out after the current Durango. So,
did it really?
I believe so. Yeah. So, $13 billion altogether across all these plants to produce these various vehicles and engines. And the big question is, what kind of shape is Stellantis going to be in by the time these hit the market?
What was the latest date? 2029 was the latest production.
Yeah, the Durango is the last one. So it's a four-year timeline.
Over the 4 years. It'll be interesting to see
if you're Stellantis, you need to show the world that you're doing something.
Yeah.
Four years is a long
time. The engine's actually going to launch production in 2026.
Okay. All right, that's cool.
The Durango is 29. The big SUV is 27 or 28. See.
So they've staggered it out, though. Over the next 4 years, it's all kind of staggered a little bit here, a little bit there, which makes sense. So they get a little bit and they keep going, get a little bit and keep going.
Yeah.
So it's a good plan. I hope they can hit it. I'm nervous for Stellantis. I feel like there's a lot happening over there.
Although, the government of Ontario is going after Stellantis because they gave them a whole bunch of money to help pay for the retooling of the Brampton plant. And now there's no plan for that plant. There's nothing that's going to be built there.
So you got to give all that money back.
Yeah.
What money?
maybe that's part of the $13 billion that they've budgeted is how much they have to pay back to the province of Ontario.
An undisclosed amount for Canada.
Yeah. Ontario's like, hey, I gave you money to do this thing and you didn't do the thing. So
who knows? Maybe they will sell that plant to, maybe a Chinese automaker.
It could happen.
BYD. There's an empty factory waiting for you.
No kidding.
There you go. It's just going to keep getting bigger and bigger all over the place.
Yeah.
BYD reminds me of PYT, the Michael Jackson
Pretty
song
Young
from
Things.
The album.
Yep.
I want to love you. BYD. See, that's funny.
Thanks for that little flashback there, Robbie.
Thank you. I'm old.
Let's finish up one more thing with Stellantis before we move on. The Alfa Romeo Tonale. Getting a refresh for model year 2026.
Two?
There it is.
What do you think of this this new face?
I'm looking at the picture. It looks fine.
It
looks like an Alfa Romeo.
Yeah.
Is it significantly changed?
It
is.
It's a little bit.
That's a pretty good change to it.
Yeah.
I like that. What are those like on the sides of the little triangle? What are those little venti bits? There's little like rectangular bits.
Oh, to the left and right of the triangle?
Yeah, to the left and right of the, what's that called, shield? I think they call it a shield.
Yeah.
What are those little bits?
It's a good question.
Those bits are kind of interesting.
That's where you stick your sandwiches.
I know, it holds like,
it holds four sandwiches for everyone in the car.
I don't dislike it.
Like a Quiznos. You can toast your sandwiches with your new tonight.
Yeah, okay. I just downloaded the image. I'm zooming. It's just some extra little slots for airflow, I think.
Okay, just airflow. I kind of like how it looks. I sort of like it.
It's got a slightly more aggressive look than the current one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a nice look.
I love the wheels. The wheels are cool.
The wheels. Don't they have wheels very close to that already on like the Stelvio? So.
It's an evolution of the the kind of pocket
it looks great.
Wheels that they've had on other models for a while now.
So we aren't going to get exactly this. This is the European model, and it's the one they have here is the 2026 Alfa Romeo Tonale Sport Special.
Yeah, so I don't know which trim levels we're going to get here.
Yeah.
But I mean, this styling is what we will get.
It's going to be key, yeah. Yeah. Oh, it looks good. I think they did a nice job. It looks really good.
And on the Alfa Romeo USA site, that's the one that they're showing
that
now.
That they're showing. So it'll be pretty dang close, if not that.
Yeah, current Tonale has a wheel design with five pockets.
Yeah,
so this
this
pockets.
Is just three.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit more dramatic because you really see those little circles.
And one other big change for the 2026 Tonale is the no more plug-in hybrid.
Oh, they got rid of the PHEV.
Yeah, it's just going to be the 2-liter turbo.
Interesting.
I don't think they sell enough of those in this country to even have anything.
What, the Tonale in general? Yeah.
Yeah, I like the Tonale. I just don't
think the Tonale actually sells better than the Dodge Hornet does.
Really?
Yeah. Well,
maybe. I mean,
I think people don't like the Hornet because, like, not journalist people, but regular people, because it doesn't fit the gerarg of Dodge. Like, I remember them talking about it when they first came out with it. And it was like, we know to give people who want a slightly kinder, gentler version of Dodge, but want to be a part of the Dodge Brotherhood, and talk about it appealing to women and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I don't think anybody wants that. I don't think that's exactly what your Dodge person's going for, but I like it. So, I like them both. I mean, they're essentially the same car, but.
Say it has a Hemi in it. Doesn't matter what the engine is. Just
stick
right.
A Hemi in a Tonale. I would drive the heck out of that car.
It's a Hornet. Just everything cast with a Hemi logo on it. Done.
Yeah.
Let's get the Hemi. Oh, all right.
So the Hornet is still outselling the Tonale, but the Hornet so far through September sold 8,486 units, which is down 45% from last year.
Ooh. Wow.
And the Tonale sold 2,109 units, which is only down 23% from last year.
Oof. Yeah, I don't. Yeah. Yeah, I guess that makes sense. Neither one is more than one powertrain.
21. That's not a lot of vehicles. Why split
in
it up
in
months. Powertrains? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy that the car only has like 22. It's going to sell maybe 2,500 over the year. And they're like, hey, we're going to make a new one and put it in the United States. I'm like, is that the best choice for your money right now?
I keep waiting to see what they're going to do with.
And that's, again, I like
their brands. Yeah. I keep waiting to see what they're going to do with their brands, how much they're going to keep, and if they're ever going to pare down and say, like, we don't need these vehicles and these. It just seems weird. 2,100 units? You know?
Well, you know, maybe this new full-size SUV they're going to build in Detroit, maybe that'll actually be a Chrysler instead of a Dodge or a Ram.
Oh, yeah, because all they have for Chrysler is the Pacifica.
Yeah.
That's right.
I mean, if you're totally going to keep the brand car. Around, you got to do something.
You got to do more than one vehicle. I mean, technically they don't, but I mean.
Bring back the Dodge Magnum.
Yeah.
Everybody loved that.
I would love to see the Magnum back. But. Well,
we're not going to.
Yeah,
that.
Maybe a Magnum based on the current Charger.
Yeah,
put a Hemi in it. We've solved all of Stellantis' problems just now.
We've
with this
solved.
Conversation.
Okay, stop selling the good, guys. The good, but no one's buying a Tonale, and bring back the Magnum.
And bring back a Magnum.
Brand every engine Hemi, and you just pipe it into the sound.
That's
the,
all you need.
Interior.
You just need the sound.
Just put the Fratsonic exhaust on everything, but make the sound be exactly like a Hemi.
Exactly like a Hemi. Don't make it some super futuristic. You sound like the Jetsons.
Add a little, haptic feedback thing on the engine, on one of the engine mounts, to make it vibrate just like a Hemi.
There you go.
Yeah. So it sounds and feels like a Hemi. You know, yeah. So what if it doesn't go as fast?
but it's got the cool parts. It sounds like it, feels like it.
And the Hemi's not the fastest engine they have anyway, so.
Right, so the only reason people want the Hemi is because of the way it sounds and feels.
And branding.
So, yeah.
And it sounds cool. What's in your car? I get a Hemi. Yeah. It just sounds cool.
And, you know, technically, you know, all these 4 and 6 cylinder engines are Hemis because, you know, they've got sort of hemispherical combustion chambers, and that's what Hemi stands for. So, yeah, just call it a Hemi.
Yeah, there we go. Problem solved. Everything's again, a Hemi. Problem solved. Hemi all the things. Used to be Hellcat all the things.
Change his first name to Hemi.
Hemi all the things.
All right, let's see. Oh, the Kia Tasman. This pickup truck, this midsize pickup truck that Kia launched last year in Australia with really interesting styling. What do you think of the Tasman?
I really kind of liked how the Tasman looked. I thought it was going to do okay. I thought it was this funky little truck, and this story makes me
funky
sad.
Funky little truck.
Funky
little
truck.
So they launched it in Australia. It's not selling real well.
Cutting, they're doing price cuts, and let's see, what was their, they said they were trying to sell 10,000 units. I'm scanning through the story. Did they say what they're up to right now?
Since delivery started in June, they've sold fewer than 2,500.
2,500, and they were aiming for 10,000?
That's more than the Tenali, though.
I know. Oh, God. The Tasman. You liked it, Robbie. Did you like how it looks?
I like it because it's weird, but I think it's maybe too weird, even for the fine people of Australia.
Yeah.
Come on, Australia. This is a cool little truck.
So they were also planning an SUV based on the Tasman. Now they are reconsidering that plan.
Yeah.
Although, frankly, excitement about this.
If the SUV looks like what's in this photo here, I would probably take that over the Tasman myself.
Is that a real photo or is that?
I don't know. I think it's a render.
No, it has some rendering name under there. So it's somebody's imagined version of it. I like the Tasman. I mean, when it first came out, remember people were like, oh, it'd be so cool if we got that here in the US. They won't give it to us because we can't have nice things. Well, apparently neither can Australia because they're not buying it.
They'll probably just redesign it. Remember the Subaru, what was the Subaru with the horrible front end? And then they threw that front end on. You know what I'm talking about.
The Tribeca.
And then they threw it on the Impreza. And then the Impreza, like, it was that for like a week. And then it went back to like,
a week.
Like, everyone's like, no. And they're like,
don't
Subaru's like,
that.
Okay, we're sorry.
Sorry, our bad. Let us fix that.
Kia will probably do the same thing with this truck.
I'm sad. I just like this little truck. I thought it was cool.
It's definitely different.
It's different.
Well, can't have that.
And it has those storage boxes above the wheel arches.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You can put all your sandwiches in there, burritos.
It's kind of, I like different.
Foods.
I like the creativity in car design, and this had some creativity to it. Boo hiss. I'm sad.
Lamborghini.
Was it the
2023 Monterey Car Week? They showed a concept called the Lanzador, which was a four-door GT. It was going to be their first electric vehicle. They've shifted position, and they decided that they're not going to do EVs just yet.
Womp womp.
But, well, you know,
I'm shocked. I tell you, shocked. Absolutely you know, these shocked.
These high-end EVs just aren't selling. Lamborghini has shifted to, they're going to keep building V12s and V8s, and they're going to put a hybrid powertrain in the Lanzador. So basically the same system that's in the new Temerario, which is the replacement for the Gallardo.
So I don't think anyone's shocked by this. Everybody's going away from pure EVs if they haven't gotten it, and they're like, wait, no, we're going to do a hybrid. Hold up.
If you haven't figured it out.
Especially for these lower volume brands.
Yeah, lower volume brand. I talked to Winkelmann, like, I think at that Monterey Car Week. And he's like, we don't even know what we're talking about. He's like, we don't even know what the questions we're going to be asking or what's going to be happening in 5 years when it comes to this.
It's true.
Yeah. And then I think that same day I talked to, not Bentley, Bugatti. He's like, we don't even make enough cars for this to be. And the people who buy our cars, like they don't, they drive them like 18 miles on average.
Yeah. I mean, Bugatti makes about 50 cars a year.
Yeah. And those, some of those people, they never so drive even, the car at others.
Even if a Bugatti put out huge amounts of emissions and, you know, used huge amounts of fuel, which it does, you know, they don't make enough of them for it to actually have any real impact one way or the other.
Yeah. It's like getting mad at your neighbor for not recycling while, like, the Pepsi company's down the street, like, burning coal to make soda. Like, all right, hold on. Let's get a little perspective here. Yeah, I mean, they don't, you know, outside of the Urus, they don't sell a lot of cars. The Urus is like, they're, you know, that pays for everything now with their Lamborghini.
Yeah, kind of like the Cayenne and Macan do for Porsche.
Exactly. It's not unexpected, especially, you know, for these low volume, like supercar makers. I mean, and they want to have the hybrid system so they can drive into city centers in Europe.
Well, that's right. Yeah, you have to.
Yeah. So you can geofence it. So it keeps the battery charged up, you know, so as you get into these urban centers, it just automatically switches over to electric mode.
Which is nice, especially when you live in a city.
All right.
Okay.
So, Nicole, when you had the Volvo EX30 a couple weeks back, did you have any issues with unlocking it?
I had some challenge. Yes. There were some times when you have the little key card thing, mm-hmm. and it was like, no. I'm like, hello. And I got it to work every time, but it was not seamless. Let's put it that way. It was not seamless.
Yeah, I had the same problem with the EX30. You know, sometimes, you know, normally, you know, if you've got a key fob, you just leave it in your pocket or your purse or wherever. And, you know, you walk up to the car and it recognizes it and it unlocks. With that key card on the EX30, sometimes it would unlock. Sometimes I'd have to go reaching into my pocket to pull this thing out and tap it on the B pillar.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, most of the time that unlocked it. Sometimes you had to do it more than once. apparently Volvo is and they've got the same thing on the EX90 as well. Apparently they are reconsidering that plan to eliminate traditional key fobs and bring those back because they're just more reliable.
I mean, some things work because they work, you know. You don't have to reinvent everything. I feel like this is a case of don't reinvent things that don't need to be reinvented.
What about traditional metal keys? Would you like to go back to those?
I mean, I'm okay with that. I'd be okay with just a good old-fashioned metal key.
Having to insert that, you know, every time to unlock the doors and to start the car.
How hard was that? You walk up, you're grabbing the handle anyway. You just put your key in and you open it, and that's almost one fell swoop.
What if you're running from a murderer?
Well, you know what? Then
that's when the key
run very fast, or make sure your friends are slower than you.
Yeah, just pushing the button, you're like, I know you don't have to be the fastest.
When you're being chased by a bear, you just don't want to be the slowest one.
You just don't need to be the slowest. Make sure your friends are not very fit and they all run slower.
You don't need to be faster than the bear; just faster than your friends.
Exactly.
Well, Porsche has decided, even though some of their customers actually have been asking for metal keys for their new Porsches,
mm-hmm.
they're not going to bring back keys, but they are going to keep key fobs, and they're going to keep start-stop buttons, power buttons. They're not getting away from that.
All right. That's good enough.
Okay.
That's awesome.
There we go.
I just want a start and stop button. I know people are like, oh, you get out of the car. Oh, it's great. I'm like, no, it's not. It's not that great. I want to push the button.
Because
I get out of the car and I'm like, oh, I got to get back in. Oh, no, the car's all closed. Now it's turned off. It's, you know, I want to listen to the stereo while I'm washing my car. Psych. No, you don't.
No, you can't.
Yeah, I mean, with a lot of EVs, if they don't have a stop-start button, you know, when you get out of the car, as soon as you get up out of the driver's seat, it shuts down.
For the Mercedes, I was at, I don't know, one of their testing facilities in Germany or somewhere. I don't even remember. It doesn't matter. And in order to keep the car on between people driving it, they had a little, like, for the seatbelt, they had a little thing where you could plug it in.
It was just the insert.
It was just the insert. Yeah, it was just the insert for the seatbelt to keep it on. So you could get out and the next person can get in. So they didn't turn. So the car wouldn't keep cycling on and off the whole time.
Jeez.
Because it was a test car. I'm like, oh, I need to get one of these. So when I'm doing photographs.
Because yeah, I know.
Like, I want the lights on. I said, yeah. No, you don't.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, it always looks better when the lights are on when you're taking photos of the car. And you know, you get out of these cars, it's like you got maybe 15 seconds before the lights shut off.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's not good. GM on their EVs, they do have, you can go into the menu and there's a thing where you can have it leave the car on for 60 minutes when you get out. So it will stay powered up for 60 minutes. So if you're doing stuff like that, if you're jumping in and out, you know, if you're moving the cars around, you know, it's not, doesn't have to reboot every time. But that's not the default. But
and I also just put a button. Yeah. Let me turn the car off.
Well, Porsche's keeping the buttons. They're keeping the key fobs. They're not going all in on these key cards.
All right. Good job, Porsche. Now we can just afford a Porsche.
Yeah, exactly. If we could just
afford
Porsche.
Well, Tom got one. He got a used.
Tom who?
Tom.
Malagni?
No. Shoot. Who got one? Someone bought a used Taycan.
Was that Malagni? I think that was Malagni, wasn't it?
Look at that. In real time. I think it was Evie.
I think I saw a video, I haven't watched it yet, that he just posted recently with the Taycan.
No, it was...
Silence.
It's Volk. How do you say Tom's name?
Oh.
Volk. Tom Volk.
Tom Volk?
Volk. I always want to say.
Oh, okay.
Volk. I'm sorry, Tom. Tom. I don't know how to say his last name.
Did you buy a used Taycan?
Damn last name.
Who's this guy again?
I remember we talked about it at some thing, and I was super excited for him. And so far, he's having a great time.
I'll bet.
Because the prices like drop.
They're the only crazy. Porsche that depreciates.
Yeah, but it's crazy how wonderful that car is, though. It's so weird, like the price drops as much as it does. In relation to the fact that it's an amazing car. I love the Taycan so much. And so, yeah.
Well, I mean, unfortunately or fortunately, depending on if you're selling or buying.
If you're me, fortunate.
That's true for most EVs, you know, is that, the depreciation has been huge on those. Earlier this summer, we bought a used 2-year-old Kia EV6. For less than half of its original sticker price. And unfortunately, a week and a half ago, some guy ran a red light, hit the car. My wife was driving home. And so that car is now totaled. But fortunately, our insurance company has been very good about processing that very quickly and got us a payment this week. And one option, if you are getting car insurance, if the insurance company offers you like a one better option on your insurance, definitely consider taking it. You know, what it means is that, whatever they value your car at, if it gets totaled, they will then give you extra to get like one model year newer or, something like that, one trim level up. I got that on our insurance from Liberty Mutual. It was like $1.20 a month extra.
Mm-hmm.
Liberty.
So it paid out, more than what we paid on the other car that we had for 3 months. And so I went to Chicago yesterday and bought another Yacht Blue EV6 2023 model with fewer miles on it and all wheel drive. And I only ended up paying an extra $1,000, less than $1,000 more than I paid for the for the other one, for the rear wheel drive one.
There you go. So get yourself a used EV, put your life in danger by hoping that someone will run a red light, and then you'll get a better one.
No, you don't want that last part.
No, that's
definitely not.
But you can definitely get some fantastic deals on used EVs. So even though the tax credits are gone, there's still some amazing deals out there on electric vehicles. Yeah. And actually, Nicole, after you were talking about the Lightning, I looked it up. And
yes.
Ford is right now, I think through the end of the year, is doing $7,500 incentives on the Lightning.
Are they really? Still, I thought they weren't doing that after all.
No. What the original plan that GM and Ford had was that on September 30th, they were going to buy up any unsold EV inventory from their dealers for their financial arms, for Ford Credit and GM Financial. And then they'd make the down payment on them and then claim the tax credit. And they asked the IRS and they said, is this okay? And the IRS said, yep, you're good. And so that, you know, and then we're going to lease the cars out after October 1st, you know, and factor in that tax credit into the lease payment. Well, a couple of members of Congress, from one particular party decided, no, we don't like you doing that. That's you're skirting the rules. And, you know, they were well within the rules. They checked, you know, but they said, okay, fine. We don't want to get into a fight about this. And so, what they're doing is they're basically paying the $7,500 out of their pocket instead of the tax credit.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
So if you're looking to buy a Lightning or a Mach-E or a GM EV or lots of other EVs, you know, there's still some really good deals to be had out there, even though the tax credit is officially gone as of a couple of weeks ago.
I just need the deals to stick around till June when our lease is up.
Is that your plan? That's it. That's all you need.
That's the plan. That's the plan.
Well, I mean, they cut the prices on the model year 26 EV or Ioniq 5.
Yeah, all the HMG stuff's probably going to be the same price, or actually cheaper, because it doesn't have the tax credits. But yeah, we're probably going to buy a used EV at that point and stop leasing. So especially with the HMGs, you're just like, all right, these are good cars. I don't really need to fight.
Yeah, I mean, you've been driving one, you know, what, 4 years now?
Yeah, we had 3 years on the Kona and over a year on the Ioniq 5. So,
yeah.
Thumbs up.
All right. So, continuing on the theme of used EVs, one of the 13 or 14 or 15 Faraday Future FF91s that were built and sold was on Bring a Trailer. Apparently, there was one earlier this year that sold on Bring a Trailer for like $235,000.
Wow.
This one only got bid up to just over $100,000. Did not sell it. Did not hit its reserve. It was $312,000 new.
You know,
wow.
This is the funniest thing. We remember in Faraday, like everyone was like, oh, this isn't really a company. And they invited, I don't know if anyone else, but they invited us to their Torrance headquarters. And it was very much like, hey, look at here. I'm like, there's no one here. They're like, yeah, but we have all the space for growth. I'm like, anyway, so they kept telling us the things they're adding to the car. I'm like, this car's going to cost like $300,000 because they're like, we're doing this all in-house. I'm like, do you not understand how suppliers work? And I guess it really was $300,000.
Wow.
I made it as a joke.
Yeah, apparently, let's see. Yeah, this one here that didn't sell was number four, VIN number four. Yeah, I like this line here from the Jalopnik story. The car in question is a 2023 Faraday Future FF91 2.0 Futurist Alliance Edition with only 900 miles on the odometer. It's also number four of only 300 that Faraday Future is definitely 100% really for sure going to build. As of earlier this year, only 16 had been delivered to paying customers.
Definitely for sure going to build.
They're going to build this.
I mean, at this rate, you know, they've been building these for, I don't know, 3 or 4 years now. So that's about 3 or 4 a year. So that's going to take them about 100 years to sell all 300.
They'll get there. They're going to get there. I believe in them. I just don't understand how this is such a front for something.
It's a front for something.
It's got to be a money laundering scheme.
That's kind of, I mean, legally, we're going to, I guess we're going to say we can't say it is, but.
It sure seems like it might be a money laundering scheme.
Yeah, I don't think they have money for lawyers, but just in case. It's a very sketchy company. It's always been a very sketchy company. If you're buying a Faraday vehicle, I don't even know how to like explain. You would have to explain to me why you were doing this.
You need to explain yourself
right now.
Like, if
you're a billionaire and you're like, oh, on a lark, I spent $300,000 on a car. Like, buying a Faraday Future as a billionaire is like buying a candy bar for me. So I'm like, all right, fine. But any other person, I'm like, eh.
For the rest of humanity.
For the rest of humanity. I bought a giant cat head, it's just a giant, you put it on. It's just a cat. I don't know why I bought it. I just thought it was funny. That's a billionaire buying a Faraday Future.
That sounds reasonable.
Yeah.
Okay.
So are there any features on your cars that you definitely don't want?
Vents that you can't actually move.
Yeah, that's pretty
okay. Cool. Yeah, that's definitely number one.
Vents.
What else? What other features?
On my car, I'm thinking.
There's safety features that beep at me too much. I would like things to beep
you don't
at
know
me
what
less.
You know what they are. That's the weird thing. Like, we had the Kona, and every once in a while they'll do this beep. I've never figured out what that beep was for. I don't know what I was doing. I could never. I was like, wait. And so I would look around. I'm like, is there another car near me? And am I doing something weird? Am I out of the lane? I don't know. I never figured out what it was.
The Expedition was periodically beeping at me, and we're looking down like, what? What? Like, what is the problem? And I'm sure there was a problem, but I'm like, what?
It's the vehicle that cried wolf. At some point, you're just like, there's like, what are you telling me? Like, give me a little something.
Well, Jason Torchinsky wrote a fun article for The Utopian. It's based on a solid 2 weeks of research from the National Bureau of Economic Research's Economics of Transportation Conference, which does not. Actually, that's what inspired him. But it's features that customers, seven least wanted car features, according to the most exhaustive study ever undertaken.
The most exhaustive. Nothing else has been this exhaustive, huh?
Yeah, apparently not.
Okay.
So number one on the list, 90-10 split folding rear seats.
There's 90-10 split folding rear seats?
I think this is just Jason having fun.
Is he making stuff up?
Jason? Jason would never make stuff up.
Oh, yeah. Gosh.
How about a speedometer calibrated in leagues per day? Or
system instead of windshield washer. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. App-controlled headrests with the subscription.
Bifocal windshield.
A glove box incinerator.
People might want that one, Jason.
Or anti-lock seat adjusters that just randomly move back and forth. So the seats just move back and forth. They won't lock into position. Actually, this one here, TFL had bought earlier or last year had bought a used Model S, a 2013 Model S. And they were doing some testing with it. And during the 6 months or so that they had it, at some point, the driver's seat decided to basically start doing this, just randomly going back and forth.
Oh my gosh.
As you're driving, it would start, the seat would start moving.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Quality workmanship there.
That's not great. That's not great.
I'll have a link to this in the show notes. It's definitely worth a read. Jason's always fun to listen to read. All right. Cadillac CT4 and CT5. The current generation of those models is being discontinued after the 2026 model year. But the CT5, at least, will be coming back for a new generation. There's going to be a redesigned one coming at some point that we don't know exactly when.
But, it will be resurrected.
Yeah, and it will have an internal combustion engine. It will not be an EV.
Woohoo! Yeah. That's good.
Will it have a manual transmission?
Don't go crazy, Robbie.
Maybe.
If it doesn't have a manual transmission, why are we even talking about it? That's, you know what I mean? It's like, that's
again,
the reason to get
yourself.
The CT5. You're like, okay, if it doesn't have a magic, like, don't come at me with like, hey, we're going to bring the CT5 back. And then it has, yeah, it's going to be a gas engine. All right. Okay.
What if they put the,
it's going to have a CVT. Oh, you sons of.
What if they put the twin turbo V8 from the, Corvette ZR1 into a new CT5? 1,000 horsepower.
Yeah. With a manual transmission. And that's the real, that's the reason to get the CT5. Yes. If they come at me with like, oh, it's got a 10 speed automatic. I don't want to talk to you.
He's going to be cranky. Really cranky.
Cause it's such a niche vehicle within that lineup. That you really need to have something that sets it apart from all the other sort of, you know, sports sedans out there. And that manual transmission is what
the CT5 Blackwing with a 6-speed manual.
Yeah.
That is something special. Because you can't even get a manual in a Corvette anymore.
Exactly. See?
Which seems wrong, but okay.
If you don't, I swear it was, you got me so angry.
Robbie's getting fired off, people.
I'm going to be so angry. They're like, look, we brought it back. We put a Hemi in it.
Time to answer a couple of listener questions.
Sorry.
First up, there's Sean Whitehurst. He just sent us a quick message after we talked about 10th anniversary of Dieselgate a couple weeks ago. He sent us a picture, which I will include a link to in the show notes, of a license plate that he saw on a car. It was on a Volkswagen Touareg a couple of years back. A Touareg diesel. And it's a New York license plate.
Yes.
D1RTYDZL. Dirty diesel.
I had to write it down as you were telling, like, DIRTY. Yeah. Cute. Yeah. Clever. Dirty diesel.
And there's also a sticker on the back window. It says, Das Polluten.
Oh, that's terrible. I mean, that's brilliant, but it's also terrible.
I'm not going to mention the other sticker that's on the back window, though.
I didn't see the picture.
And then Bill sent us a question here or a comment. It says, and this is your opportunity to defend yourself, Robbie.
I don't have to defend myself.
Brace
I have to defend Bill's bladder, but please go on.
Okay.
I enjoy the podcast every week and appreciate what you guys do. But on the latest episode, I heard Robbie say, nobody drives more than 250 miles, referring to the vehicle range.
That I preface that as no one in like my age. I did say when I was in my 20s, I drove like 1,000 miles without pulling over. But please go on.
I may be the exception, but I definitely drive further than that on road trips. I typically drive between 300 and 400 miles, then stop for gas, snacks, and a restroom break before taking a total of no more than 15 minutes. I then drive again somewhere between 300 and 400 miles again. I have been wanting to get an EV for a few years. For some EVs, the range for the first leg of the trip is okay if starting with a battery that is 100% charged. Getting 90% range before stopping to recharge at 10% means that my desired range is easily achievable in some EVs. Unfortunately, the range available for the second leg of the trip would be limited to only 70% of the total range of the vehicle, DC fast charging from 10 to 80%. I think I will need an EV with a total range of 500 miles in order to get the desired range on the second leg. At a reasonable price point, I don't see any options. I'm hoping that new battery technology will provide for this higher range. Even then, I worry about battery degradation. I see that most warranties require a loss of more than 20% to require a battery replacement under warranty. That means that my max range can drop to only 400 miles, and the manufacturer would say that is normal. 70% of that is not enough for my road trip driving style. I'm cautiously optimistic that I will be able to get an EV that satisfies my needs in the next 5 to 8 years. I certainly hope so.
So are you driving a diesel, Bill? Like, what are you driving? 400 miles of range. 400, you're talking like 6 hours behind the wheel.
We don't know where Bill lives. Maybe he lives in, what is it, Montana, where you can drive 80 miles an hour? Isn't that one of the states or no speed limit? You could live someplace where he's just like flying.
Still
so
a long
time. He clocks that 400 miles in no time,
sitting in a car.
Robbie.
It's a long, I mean, you can drive 70 miles an hour on California freeways, which means you're driving 80, which means I'm driving 85. And even then, I'm like, I got to pee.
Yeah.
It's literally, I end up having to pull over to pee before the car needs to be charged. So Bill has a mightier
Bill has a mighty, mighty bladder is what he's saying.
He has a mightier bladder than I. For now, who knows? Or maybe Bill doesn't drink as much liquid as I do. Or maybe Bill doesn't see like a taco stand and want to pull over.
Bill's eating fewer tacos.
300, 400 miles.
So, you know, I think, you know, the quote, nobody drives more than 250 miles, I think maybe taking that a little bit out of context. The majority of people,
most people don't drive that much. Yeah.
They don't drive that much without a brake.
Yeah. You want to pull over. Also, that's so bad on your butt and your back. And it's good to get out and stretch. Again, I am, how old am I? 51.
How old am I? Old enough to ask that question.
I am 51. When I was in my 20s, I drove from Tehachapi to Kansas City. And we were stuck in a snowstorm, which meant we couldn't pull over. So we were doing 25 miles an hour at some point. And I was in the car for 10 hours straight. Totally fine. You know why? Because I was like 22.
Yeah.
I was 22. It had nothing to do with range. I was doing 25 miles an hour in a snowstorm. Because if we went quicker than if we went faster than 25, the wheels would spin. So we just like cruise along.
And I mean, you know, yesterday I drove 270 miles from West Chicago back to Ypsilanti in our new to us EV6, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, I had to stop a couple of times, for a bathroom break and, you know, and also to charge because the one downside, the dealer did great. I mean, the whole in and out with buying this car, like 10 minutes.
Amazing.
Didn't try to sell me on any extended warranties or anything else. Had the paperwork ready. Said, sign here, initial here. Okay, here's the keys. And
that's,
you know,
amazing.
So I was out of there shockingly fast. But the only downside is they had only charged it to 60%. So, I stopped in, I initially stopped in Michigan City, Indiana, and grabbed a sandwich from Panera and then went across the street to the Electrify America to charge up, and I could not get the charger or the app or something to work properly and start the charge. And so I said, excuse me.
Yeah, we're pulling swears on the podcast now. I've been waiting forever for this.
And then so I continued on to Benton Harbor to the next EA station, and it charged up fine there. It was going like almost 240 kilowatts for a while there.
240 mother effing kilowatts.
Yeah,
MFR.
Listen, I support Bill and his magical bladder that can not have to pee for 5 hours from sitting in the car. If you're doing 80 miles an hour for 400 miles, that's still 5 hours.
Well, yeah,
it's such a long time.
I brought my NAX adapter with me. You know, I threw that in my backpack when I got on the train yesterday, just in case I needed to stop at a supercharger. But then I realized, if I stop at a supercharger with this car, it's only going to charge at 84 kilowatts. So I'm just going to go for Electrify America and get my 230, 240 kilowatts.
Yeah,
I just got an update in my Ioniq 5, a software update that now shows the Tesla supercharging stations. So now I'm sure, hopefully, they're finally sending out those free adapters. I think not the last road trip, the one before, I went 40 minutes before I had to pull over to pee.
Robbie is fixated on this now. He is just so baffled Bill.
I drink so much liquid. I'm just always drinking. Look, I'm going to lift up. Here are the three.
Are you overhydrating, Robbie?
There's a Coke can. He's got a Diet Coke. There's a water glass. And there's a Red Bull.
And a Red Bull.
There's a Red Bull can on my desk. So I think I just drank more liquids than Bill.
I mean, two of those things that you had in your hand there are also loaded with lots of caffeine, which doesn't help.
Diet Coke.
Well, yeah, I got diuretics.
Water, it's not quite as bad.
Yeah. I mean, and I drink a lot of water.
I'm 59, and I managed to go over 2 hours. Without a bathroom break yesterday.
I mean, I can do it.
Yeah.
I just don't see the point.
Exactly.
Like, if I'm driving, I'm like, sometimes I'll be like, okay, I kind of have to pee because I decided to have like a tea before I left. And then I like stopped and got like a giant Diet Coke from like the 7-Eleven. And now I'm driving and I'm like, oh, if I just keep going, I can make it to the, I can get to this one charging station because they have like tacos at this charging
So I can hold it.
But it's, yeah, literally my road trips up and down the state of California are essentially like, where are the taco stands? Where can I get tacos? I'm going to fill my body with a lot of Diet Coke while I'm driving around.
Well, I had a, this week I had a flight, a red eye flight back from San Francisco to Detroit. And unfortunately, you know, cause it was a late booking, I was stuck back in coach. But I did have a window seat, which
means the worst on a red eye.
Yeah. So I just made sure I didn't really drink much of anything before while I was sitting for at least an hour.
He was nicely dehydrated when he got on the flight.
I'm doing that before I'm flying, I think, coach to New York from Las Vegas this week. It's a red eye.
Uh-huh.
And
I put
myself next to, I usually sit aisle, but I put it next to the window so I could sleep, so I could lean on something, so I wouldn't be leaning on the poor person. And I have broad shoulders, so I'm just like getting hit constantly by the tray going up and down the aisles. So I have to make sure I don't drink anything before. Like a child. I'm like a child. Bill, I'm a child. I don't know what to tell you.
I managed to sleep for 3.5 hours on a 4-hour flight. So.
I have the bladder the size of a child, probably. Who knows?
The joys of getting old.
Yeah.
I know you're being very quiet, Nicole.
I like the idea.
Your bladder issues.
I think there should be like an auto journalist like thing. We should do the Bill challenge where we all get in the cars and we see how far, and we all have to drink like a 32-ounce, whatever, doesn't matter.
Big gulp of Diet Coke.
Of Diet Coke. And then we all have to see how far we can drive before we have to pull over. You're not allowed to pee yourself or in a bowl or in a bottle.
Well,
yeah.
I wouldn't be doing that anyway. So there you go.
Could we do the Bill challenge? I'm gonna tell everybody this next week at all the car events I'm going to. I'm like, there's this guy, Bill. He drives 500 miles without having to pee. Bill's a superhero. Do you think you could do the Bill challenge?
I could definitely not go that far without a break.
What do you drive, Bill? I'm very curious.
Bill, write back to us. Tell us what you're driving.
If he's driving like a nice luxury
really
vehicle,
fast?
that's a big difference.
How much do you drink before you get in the car, or do you dehydrate yourself before you get in the car?
Basically, Robbie and Sam need you to justify this feat that you are.
You're like a superhero.
Then how old are you, Bill?
Is he part of the Avengers?
So here's questions for you, Bill.
At this point, Bill is an Avenger as far as I'm concerned.
He's an Avenger.
So, Bill, here are our questions. What are you driving? Do you dehydrate before you get in the car? And how old are you?
There you go.
Write back
questions.
To us for next week and let us know, please.
He's going to get back to us. He's like, I drink a super big gulp. I drive a 1990 Ford Escort with shot and suspension, so my bladder's being jostled the entire time, and I'm 75. It's like, damn it, Bill. Make me question everything I've done in my life.
If he's driving this frequently for such long distances, he's probably managed to stretch out his bladder.
Oh my God, he's probably got to stop.
There's a lot of going on here.
All right. With that, we'll talk to you next time. Bye.
Bye.